Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Is it a coincidence that Jeff Blair has covered two perfect games? Or should Dennis Martinez and David Cohn be giving him the full credit he deserves? This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You gotta fight for your right to party!
See, this is part of the deal of being a sports fan in a city where a team makes the playoffs. Last year was great if you were a Raptors fan. It was unexpected. It was like one big, wonderful ride. The ride roughly began with the Rudy Gay deal, continued through the playoffs, lost to the Brooklyn Nets in a terrific series. I mean, it was all roses. Jurassic Park, Masai Ujiri. Basketball took over the city. Basketball established a foothold, or I should say reestablished a foothold it hadn't had in this city since Vince Carter. That's the good stuff. You know what happened this year? Well, now we're seeing a little bit of reality here. Now we're seeing a team that was expected to win a round in the playoffs, regardless of what Masai Ujiri, with all due respect to Masai Ujiri, says, regardless of what he says, the Raptors fan base will not accept that this season has been a success without a playoff series win, for a variety of reasons, but mostly because people like to have something tangible to hang on to. But you know what? This is part of the deal. Part of the deal, having a game like Game 1, having that type of performance, now sitting back, waiting for a couple of days, getting ready to see your team get back at it in a second game with a lot of questions. Think about where this franchise was last year at this time. Think about where it is now. Think about how we're approaching the playoffs in this city. Think about the basketball discussion, the depth of the basketball discussion, the issues. Should James Johnson play? Is Terrence Ross a liability on the floor? How do you use Patrick Patterson effectively? We're having basketball discussions in this city because the tone has changed. It changed last year. Expectations were raised. But beyond that, the tone of the discussion has changed. This is what life is like in a city with a good sports team. It's what life is like in a city with a team that is in the playoffs, a team where fans expect to win. We haven't had that in Toronto for a long time. The Leafs make the playoffs against Boston. None of you expected the Leafs to beat Boston. Raptors make the playoffs last year. Few of you, and I include myself, expected them to beat the Nets. So this is all part of the deal, and I know that there are Raptors fans out there who are anxious, who are concerned, who are pissed off. I get all that. You're down 1-0. You didn't like what you saw from the team in the first game, but folks, that's what the playoffs are about. You're going to win some games. You're going to lose some games. In the meantime, it's just great being able to have a discussion about basketball issues in the context of a playoff series, and there's no one better to do that with than Matt Devlin, who is the Raptors play-by-play voice in Sportsnet. Matt, thank you for doing this.
Anytime. You know that, Jeff.
I ran into a couple of people yesterday, and they were talking about the Raptors. There's a lot of consternation, obviously, after the way that first game went. But I'm trying to tell people, this is the deal, right? You got a team in the playoffs. You're going to have these debates. You're going to have these discussions. I love it. I mean, I'd rather be doing this than discussing who they're going to pick in the draft, you know?
I completely agree. I mean, I think that's what the evolution of the game, you know, in this city leads you to. And I think that that's a positive. And for, you know, the Raptor fans out there, I mean, we understand, we've talked about it so often, how great they are. And when you have a fan base, you know, like the Raptors have, and everybody in North America knows how great they are. I mean, Paul Pierce, how many times can Paul Pierce talk about what a tough environment it is and how much he loves playing in front of the fans here, despite, you know, everything that they call him. And he, you know, seems to always rise to the occasion. But when you have that sort of environment, you know, it's going to lead to you know, breaking down a game and every second of a game. And that's what playoff basketball, it's what playoff hockey, it's what playoff baseball, it's what the, you know, playoffs in the NFL, that's what that's about, is to break down every moment, you know, of a game, every decision that was made. And that's what makes it great.
Matt, where do you stand in this whole, the issue around James Johnson, if in fact there is an issue? I mean, clearly it's, you know, it's the hobby horse for the fan base right now, right? And I admit, I'm one of those people, and Matt, I think we talked about this at times. We looked back at last year's series, and we thought, what's kind of the one thing they missed? Well, I think for much of this year, we thought James Johnson was the thing they were missing. Hell, maybe James Johnson was the it Paul Pierce was talking about, you know, and the guy can't get on the floor in the playoffs. Am I missing something here? Is there something going on that we didn't, you know, that we're just not recognizing as fans or media?
Well, I think that, and Dwayne Casey has talked about this, it always, to him, becomes a matchup scenario as to why he uses James or he doesn't. Now, all of us know that, you know, one of the reasons why they went out and brought in James last summer was because of what happened in the postseason last year with Joe Johnson and Paul Pierce against, you know, the Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, the interesting thing was that while Paul Pierce wasn't used at the four during the regular season, it was something that Randy Whitman and Paul Pierce sat down and talked about. And Randy Whitman spoke to, you know, Paul about what exactly they did last year to beat the Toronto Raptors in the first round of the playoffs. And they kind of went through the game plan that they used a year ago. And so, you know, what happened? Well, they used Paul Pierce at the four. Now, Paul Pierce in the first half at the four really got them going, specifically in the second quarter. The Raptors turned around and went on a 16-3 run in the second half with, you know, him at the four. However, utilizing him at the four did change certainly the matchups on the floor. And I think a lot of fans looked around and said, well, geez, isn't that why James Johnson was brought in? But clearly, you know, Dwayne Casey didn't feel as though he needed to utilize him in game one. It's going to be interesting tonight because I think Washington sits back and says, okay, they have James Johnson. You know, why didn't they use him in game one? Well, more than likely, they're going to use him here in game two. Well, Washington is sitting there saying, well, we didn't use Chris Humphreys in game one. Mm. You know, we have him in our back pocket, you know, and he can play the four and he's energetic, can get on the glass. So it'll be interesting. You know, the chess match continues.
And it's not just, you know, I know Eric Smith and other people have made this point. It's not just, I mean, James Johnson isn't the reason, or the lack of James Johnson isn't the reason, I don't think, that they necessarily lost that game.
No. You know, look, there's a lot of reasons why. You know, everybody points certainly to, you know, 19 offensive rebounds. We can talk about the starting backcourt and what they shot, and in talking to the players, they look around to themselves and say, you know, how many nights DeMar, Kyle, and Lou are going to shoot what they shot in game mm-hmm. one. But on the flip side, Washington is going to sit there and say, well, okay, the starting backcourt for the Raptors went 8 of 30. Well, our starting backcourt went 11 of 41, and we came away with a victory. I think the big thing was that John Wall only had one turnover, and he turns the ball over at a high rate, nearly four a game. And they weren't able, the Raptors, to really dictate the tempo and the pace. Raptors, statistically speaking, from an analytics standpoint, Jeff, their pace is not off the charts. Mm-hmm. However, they do have a tempo where they can get out and go. And while their pace of play, quote unquote, analytically speaking, isn't, you know, in the top half of the league, when they do get out and play with pace and tempo, it's to their benefit. And certainly against a team like Washington, it's extremely beneficial. And why? Because Washington has the fifth best defensive rating in the NBA. You do not want to play them in the half court. You would prefer to push it and get some easy buckets. And that, to me, is really the key for the Raptors. What can you get in early offense? Defensively, get a turnover. Can you get out and go? When you get a rebound, and this is why rebounding is so important, when you get a rebound and you see Dwayne Casey urging his team to go, 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 and it wasn't just Kyle, but it's DeMar, it's Lou, everybody, let's get out and go, because it's easier to get the shots that you want when Washington is scrambling defensively than it is when they're locked down. And that's, you know, John Wall talked about this, Jeff. Hey, I got to lock down on Kyle Lowry because he's a catalyst for that team, and he was able to do that.
And, you know, beyond that, I think one of the issues going into this series, a lot of people talked about, and certainly Dwayne Casey talked about, was the Raptors were going to have to do a better job in the pick and roll coverage against Washington, because Washington lives and dies off that. And Dwayne Casey's just, he's clearly not very happy with what he's seen so far.
Well, it's why Jonas Valanciunas, you know, doesn't play a ton of minutes. You know, it's, you go back to game one, 24 minutes. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, he feels, Dwayne Casey feels more comfortable with Patrick Patterson and Amir Johnson in that situation. I mean, it's been that way throughout the entire season, and I don't foresee it changing, you know, now. And I think that that's one of the things that if you're around any professional sport, things typically don't change a ton when you get to the playoffs as far as the demeanor of a team. And if you've done something now for 82 games, yes, there are different things that you can now kind of bring into play. Prime example, Washington with Paul Pierce sliding him to the four. But as far as the comfort level of a coach, and that's different because Paul Pierce is, you know, future Hall of Famer, 2008, you know, NBA champion, and has 30% of the playoff experience on the Washington roster. But if you're Dwayne Casey, if you felt comfortable now for 82 games with Patterson and Amir Johnson in pick and roll coverage, you're going to continue to go down, you know, that line, unless Jonas is showing you something early in the game that's going to allow you to say, okay, I feel comfortable with him on the floor.
In conversation with Matt Devlin on the Jeff Blair Show, Lou Williams wins the Sixth Man of the Year award yesterday, justly deserved, I think we'd all say. Matt, what do the Raptors do with him?
That's a great question. I think a lot of it depends upon what transpires, you know, during the postseason. You know, I think there'll be some other teams that are going to be out there and are going to be interested. And I think a lot of it depends upon what ultimately the long-term vision, you know, is of, you know, Masai Ujiri and what he, you know, views, you know, the value of Lou Williams is and how much they want to, you know, spend on Lou, because, you know, remember, they do have a lot of cap space coming off the books next year. So it's going to be, to me, it's a very intriguing summer for the Toronto Raptors. And I think, you know, some of it's going to be dictated upon what transpires here, you know, over the course of the next, you know, potentially six games and maybe longer.
Yeah. Is at what point, and I guess, you know, Masai Ujiri can probably answer this a little better, but at what point does a sixth man stop being good value for his money? You know, that's kind of the issue, isn't it?
Well, sure, because, you know, if you look at the recent history outside of Jamal Crawford, but a James Harden wins a sixth man of the year, and then, of course, he evolves into, you know, a starter and MVP candidate. Well, that's different for Lou Williams. Lou Williams is 28 years of age. This is his first healthy season now in the last, you know, three seasons. And, you know, for him, you know, he understands this is who he is as a player. He's changed his game. He's, you know, taken more threes, made more threes. He, you know, led the league on fouls drawn, on jump shots, as we've all, you know, noted throughout the course of the season. How many times did he get to the free throw line? So, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, how that all, you know, evolves over the course of the summertime, because then if you look back to this season and you go back to, you know, a season ago, how many times did we see Vasquez and Lowry have so much success, right, together playing on the court? And we've seen it at times this year. But with Lou's presence, you know, that takes a little bit away from Gravis Vasquez and the minutes there and, you know, also, you know, what he brings to the table. So it's a balancing act with, you know, Lou Williams, and they've done a great job up to this point. And then you have Vasquez, who also kind of brings a different sort of component to it. He obviously plays the one, but we've seen Lou Williams play the one as well. So it's certainly, there are options for the Raptors as it comes to Lou Williams and what they want to do long term with him.
Matt, it's great of you to do this. Should be a fun game tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, look forward to it anytime.
All right, that's Matt Devlin, Raptors play-by-play voice, TV play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. And again, game two goes tonight at the Air Canada Center. Lots of activity downtown. Got the Raps. You got the Orioles and Blue Jays as well. First pitch in that game is 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So down early and enjoy. I was going to say enjoy the weather. A little on the chilly side. But considering what we had for winter, it's not bad. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. You can ask a question this hour as we get set for the Raptors game. What would you do with Lou Williams? Sixth man of the year. Real popular player in Toronto. But as Matt Devlin and I both said, you know, you get to a point where you start to wonder about a guy's cost effectiveness. Now, we're going to have, the Raptors are going to have a decision to make with Lou Williams in the offseason. And I have to admit, I think Matt's right. Let's see where this series goes. There's a lot of money coming off the books. We know that the salary cap is going to jump up tremendously in the next couple of years. I mean, the Raptors are a bit like the Blue Jays. They're really nicely positioned financially for what is coming down the road. There's not a lot of onerous contracts in either team. This is a pretty... The Raptors, I believe, are among the top five teams in the NBA in payroll, but it's still a pretty cost-effective unit. But they do have a decision to make with Lou Williams. They do have a decision to make with the sixth man of the year. So what do you do with Lou Williams? You had to make the call right now. If you had to make the call today, would you bring Lou Williams back? 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Want to congratulate, by the way, George Malinas in Courtois, Ontario. You have qualified for our Raptors extravaganza, courtesy of our friends at Porter Escapes. You've qualified to win round-trip flights from Billy Bishop Airport to Dulles International, courtesy of Porter Escapes. Three nights hotel at the Renaissance Washington, D.C. Downtown Hotel. Four tickets to see the Raptors play the Wizards on Friday. Four tickets to see the Raptors play the Wizards on Sunday. That game, by the way, is now a 6:30 p.m. tip-off. And VIP clubhouse access at both games. This includes unlimited food and drink. Brady and Walker will give you your next chance to qualify. And the grand prize winner will be announced on Dean Blundell and Company on Thursday morning. So you got a couple more days left, one day left, actually, to qualify for this trip. And it's a great prize. And we congratulate George Malinos from Courtois, Ontario, for qualifying. 416-870-0590, star 590, and 888-666-0590. Joel in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Oh, okay. I guess you're not on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We asked the question, Lou Williams, the Sixth Man of the Year award winner, do you bring him back? What move would you make with Lou Williams? Now we go to Joel in Toronto.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, man.
Good morning. Listen, I said this about 4 months ago. I said that, you know, he was playing pretty good, and I said that they should sign him now.
You dropped the bad word. But your point... And I do actually think remember you calling. Your point is accurate. The thing is, I don't know with the sixth man. You know, you say this price is going to go up. I don't know if necessarily individual honors like that raise a guy's value. Especially in a salary cap league. I think more than anything else in a salary cap league, your value is driven by some hard analytics. And I guess that's one of the issues, you know, Matt and I were talking about with Lou Williams. I mean, what is too much for a sixth man? You know, what's the going rate? And it's not as if there's kind of a cookie cutter mold for sixth man, right? I mean, how a sixth man is used or who is the sixth man depends on the skill set, depends on the talent level of the team he's on. Lou Williams may not have gotten as much playing time in another team or for another team as he did with the Raptors. His skill set was perfect for what the Raptors needed right now, for what they needed this year. But there are other teams around the NBA where perhaps he would not have been used as much as a sixth man. So it's kind of hard to sit here and say and attach a value to a guy and say that his value with the Raptors would be the same value with the Boston Celtics, would be the same value with the Houston Rockets. Now, Lou Williams has, I mean, he played for the Philadelphia 76ers. He performed well as a sixth man, so he's done it for a couple of teams, but I'm not entirely certain that what works here as a sixth man would work for Lou and other teams. And that's always the issue when you're trying to judge a player's value, is you got to remember that his value to a particular team at a particular time doesn't necessarily translate into an equivalent value next year with a different team at a different time. Sarah and Barry, you're on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. So what do you do with Lou Williams, Sarah? Do you bring him back? I know he's a popular player. Do you bring him back, or do you need to really think long and hard about doing this?
Well, I'm not much of a business-minded expert when it comes to sports or real life, but...
Then you found really, the right show, believe me.
Perfect. Really, what my comment is that I think it's kind of foolish to sit here wringing our hands, worrying about, is this title giving him too much value, or is it the right amount, or what do we do? I mean, we're still going to watch him perform in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That performance alone could increase or decrease his value to Toronto, to any number of other teams. So we've kind of just got to let life unfold in front of us, let him perform, cheer on his good work, and for a change, let's celebrate the fact that something good came to a member of a Toronto team,
mm-hmm.
and not worry about the repercussions, because I think by default, that's our natural go-to, is to worry about what if from every good or bad situation that comes our way.
Yeah, you know what? Welcome. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you for the call. And welcome to the world of the modern sports fan. That's entirely true. Enjoy what you have. And that's what I was trying to say at the start of the hour. So enjoy. I know the playoffs, man, they're frustrating. They can drive you nuts. Obviously, you want your team to win. But I just think it's so great to have this type of dialogue, to have this type of emotion attached to a Toronto sports team and a basketball team at that. I mean, this isn't, I don't know if this city is on the verge of becoming more of a Raptor city than it is a Maple Leaf city. I've heard that, God, going back to when the Blue Jays won the World Series, Toronto's a baseball city now. It's not a hockey city now. And it's a basketball city when Vince Carter was there. It's not a hockey city. It's always going to be a Leafs city. I've made this point often. I don't know if this is a great hockey city. It's a great Leafs city. And there are going to be times when the Blue Jays are going to be front and center. There are going to be times when the Raptors are going to be front and center. But we can't worry about stuff like that. Just kind of enjoy the normal push and pull of a playoff series. You know, enjoy the fact that you're going to get a chance to get back at the same team a couple of nights later. That's a great thing about playoffs, is it really does build up that one-on-one animosity. It builds up those one-on-one battles. But Sarah's right. And it's not to sit here and worry about whether or not Lou Williams goes or whether or not he comes back. But, I mean, I do think you need to have the discussion, and you can put it in that context. You can put it in the context of, yeah, we're enjoying the basketball right now. We hope like hell that Lou Williams and the rest of the Raptors light up the Wizards tonight. But you can also talk about this. Yusuf in Brampton, you're on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Hello, first-time caller. How are you doing today?
Very good, thank you.
Very good. Well, I would say you can bring him back, but you know, Lou Williams, he has so many injuries in Atlanta and
mm-hmm.
Philly, but not for a long term, just a short term, 2 years deal, and he's not a max player. You can get a lot of players like him. He's not a good defense either.
Right. And that is...
Maybe they changed the coach too, because the coach doesn't know how to use his players.
Well, you know, you've touched on something that I appreciate the call. You've touched on something we've talked about in this show, and I, as much as I like Dwayne Casey, I can tell you if this team goes out in the first round, we're going to be talking about it the day after. There's been kind of this undercurrent throughout the season. I think maybe it goes back to the fact that a lot of people still don't necessarily view Dwayne Casey as being Masai Ujiri's guy. I mean, I don't know the two men well enough to know whether or not that's the case. I know that this relationship is a lot smoother than the relationship with Brian Colangelo when Dwayne Casey was supposedly Brian Colangelo's guy. But it's been interesting how in the past 2 months, in particular, the dialogue in this city about the Raptors, how it kind of shifted a bit, how the landscape shifted a bit, and all of a sudden you started to hear this kind of these mumblings, you heard these murmurings that perhaps if the Raptors don't win a round or don't go further than a round of the playoffs, that Dwayne Casey's job might be in jeopardy. You started to hear it, I would argue, probably February. People started talking about it. Maybe a little bit earlier than that. And I think Yusuf he's touching something, and that's a discussion we're going to have if in fact the Raptors do not win this series. You know, my only hope is that if they don't win the series, that Masai Ujiri addresses it right away. But, you know, it's only one game. There's a lot left to go. Let's worry about the basketball stuff right now and not big picture this. And one of the things we've seen happen with the Raptors that I really liked in the past year is we kind of went away from big picture, from everything relating to the state of the franchise, everything relating to the state of the fan base, to the long-term viability of the franchise, yada, yada, yada. We kind of went away from that and we went into more direct basketball stuff. This player needs to do this for this team to win. The Raptors need to go out and get this type of player. This is what Dwayne Casey has to do with this particular player in order to maximize his performance. It's great being able to have those small, focused discussions on a particular aspect of the team compared to always going big picture and always worrying about the next controversy or the next setback coming down the road. I should tape what I just said and we can play it back during the Leafs next year, because I think it's all going to be about the big picture with the Leafs probably for the rest of our lifetimes. Well, maybe not that long. Eddie Olchuk is our regular Tuesday insider on the Jeff Blair Show. See what Eddie Olchuk's travel schedule's been lately. He was in New York calling the Pens and Rangers and Capitals and Islanders on the weekend. He's back in Chicago now for Game 4 of the Preds and Blackhawks. You know that Eddie Olchuk was watching that game in Winnipeg last night. He, of course, made the famous speech at the end of that 1996 playoff game in Winnipeg, where he promised to bring the Stanley Cup back to Winnipeg. Let's get his thoughts on the return of playoff hockey to Winnipeg and what we can expect in tonight's games. Four games on tap: Lightning, Red Wings, Capitals, Islanders, Preds, Blackhawks, Canucks at Flames. Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC will join the Jeff Blair Show when we return at 10:40.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Money is a full-time job. I don't need the aggravation. I'm a lazy slob.
All right, Baseball Central. I almost said Baseball Central at noon, but I caught myself. Like qualified qualers, I caught myself. Baseball Central with Kevin Barker is just a few minutes away from taking to the airwaves. And we are going to play Brian Price's rant in its entirety. All five glorious minutes. All 77 F-bombs. From start to finish, we will play that on Baseball Central. And we'll also be joined by Rick Dempsey, studio analyst for the Baltimore Orioles. We'll get you set for tonight's first of three games between the Orioles and the Blue Jays at the Rogers Center. Mark Burley in the mound against Bud Norris. First pitch set to fly shortly after 7 o'clock in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. There will, of course, be four, count them, four hockey games on tap tonight, four NHL playoff games, Lightning and the Red Wings. The game three of their series will go at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario. Caps and Islanders, game four, 7:30 on Sportsnet 360. Canucks and Flames, game four of that series goes at 10 p.m. on CBC. And the Predators and Blackhawks, game four of that series goes at 9:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Working the Predators, Blackhawks game is our next guest, Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC. And Eddie, before we get to this series, just wanted to get your take on what we saw in Winnipeg last night, the reaction of that fan base to the return of playoff hockey to that city. Got to tell you, I watched it. You were the first person I thought of. And I wonder what was going through your mind when you saw that reaction.
Well, Jeff, thanks a lot, and great to be with you today. Great to be with you always, every week. I got chills. It took me back from 19 years ago, coming up on the 28th of this month, to see an important hockey game back in a city that's always been a National Hockey League city, even when the Jets weren't there, and having played in that last game and having played, you know, it's almost 6 years of my career, six of my 16 years in the NHL in Winnipeg. You know, I always tried to become entrenched in a community, both on and off the ice, you know, like I did when I was in Toronto and obviously here in my home in Chicago. But it was bedlam. It was emotional. It was the team is, I think the team is finally back when you get a game of that importance.
Yep.
Back in the city. So I just think it's galvanizing for a lot of reasons, but the community, you know, most importantly. But I think the reaction of the fans and the whole province was pretty special. So it was, you know, like I said, I got chills watching that last night, and it was, what a hockey game. I mean, it was like, I mean, this is like 1996. You had, what, four or five goals in the second period?
Exactly.
You thought you had a chance to be a 7-6 game, but what a game. What a gutsy performance by Anaheim in that environment, but it was a great scene, and I'm glad the Jets are back in Winnipeg.
The game itself, the series itself, we're really learning a lot about Anaheim, aren't we?
Yeah.
You want to talk about pushback and focus and all that? That's the Anaheim Ducks right now.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, you know, I mean, we talked at the start of the year, and you know, you remember. I mean, I said that there's no team or no coach that has more pressure on this year than the Anaheim Ducks, considering where they've been, how they lost last year to Los Angeles in Game 7 at home, and their arch rival goes on to win their second cup in 3 years. And you know, Bob Murray, the general manager, went out over the course of the summer and said, "Okay, well, you know what? We need Ryan Kesler." Mm-hmm. We need more size and heaviness. So what does he do? He gets Kesler. He gets Clayton Stoner. He gets Nate Thompson. He's not done over the course of the regular season, is he? He makes a trade with Montreal. He picks up Wisniewski, who's an extra guy right now in the back end. He picks up Simone Dupre from Pittsburgh. And you know, look, I mean, I don't want to say they're going for it, but I mean, I would say that they're pretty darn close to it. I mean, with what they have, and you know, I mean, we know how great Getzlaff and Perry are, but you're right. I mean, a resilient team, the ability to be able to come back. Now, that's, I don't think that's how you exactly want to draw it up every game and every series, but the goaltending, I mean, Anderson last night, I mean, he robbed Little.
Yep.
I mean, a couple of times there were just incredible opportunities. He made a huge save on Michael Frolik in overtime, and then, eventually Raquel after a great work by Andrew Cogliano and a shot from Boschman. So, I mean, look, they, they can play any way you want. Like, I don't think, Jeff, and I think that there's this, I think it's the history of the Anaheim Ducks and, you know, probably under the leadership of Brian Burt back in the day. I mean, they're a physical team, but, you know, I don't think they're as physical as Winnipeg or St. Louis. I think that they just have some guys that are there and they play a hard-nosed type of game. And I think that when they play on the line and not get all rattled when Perry gets drilled in the back of the head by Buffalo or somebody takes a run at Getzlaff, as they lose their cool. And I mean, discipline's an important part. We talked about it in the series, you know, with Pittsburgh, is can they control their emotion? Can they stay out of the penalty box? Because that's been a chronic problem there. But Anaheim has shown a lot of resiliency and obviously have a pretty good, you know, they have a pretty good stranglehold on this series up 3 against the Jets.
Now, Eddie, the series that you're working tonight, the Predators and the Blackhawks, Chicago leading that series 2-1. The Scott Darling story, I found fascinating in the middle of the season. I find it fascinating now, but I'm really interested on Corey Crawford's reaction to this. I saw an interview with Corey, part of an interview on TV the other day, and I thought, I thought he's probably a more mature guy than he was a couple of years ago. I don't know if he would have handled it the same way, but I was really impressed because you can tell when a guy is hurting and you can tell when a guy is... is trying, quote unquote, trying to be a good teammate. But I really got the sense, Eddie, he's trying to be a good teammate here, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the one thing, Jeff, on this thing is, you know, it seems that, you know, when players, people handle situations that we all feel the way that they should, is that, you know, people stand up and take notice and say, well, you know, geez, you know, Corey Crawford's handling this well, or James Wisniewski's handling it well in Anaheim with being a healthy scratch when his general manager gives up, you know, a second rounder or whatever it is for him. Well, you know what? That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
It's a team game. This isn't about one guy. This is about the collection of people. And you're right. I mean, Corey Crawford, we've talked about him this year, Jeff. I mean, to me, and following all, you know, doing all of them, you know, the majority of the Blackhawk games, I should say, and seeing a lot of games throughout the National Hockey League, like, I thought he was a top three goaltender this year. I mean, this was his best year as a pro, hands down.
Mm-hmm.
Game one against Nashville, you know, I thought the first and third goal by Colin Wilson, first one was a great shot, third one was a redirect in the first period, and the second one he got wandering out of the net and Stahlberg put in the empty net, and Joel Quenneville made the coaching change. I thought in game two when Joel put him back in after Darling came in long relief, and let me just make this clear to you, being a big baseball fan, there's no question that Scott Darling has proven to be the best long reliever in town after that performance in game one. There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
I think, Jeff, that, you know, when Crawford went back in for game two, he looked small. He was down early on some goals. He gave up some soft goals, and Joel Quenneville did the right thing. But, you know, just off on the tangent there a little bit, I think getting back to Corey Crawford and how he's handled it, yeah, he wants to play. He said that yesterday, and that's what you want. But he's a team guy. And whether you're Antoine Vermette, who the Blackhawks gave a first-rounder for at the trade deadline, being a healthy scratch in the first two games, is you put your nose to the grindstone, you wait for your opportunity, you're supposed to be there and support your teammates. And when your number gets called, you never know what's going to happen. You better be ready. So I understand when people talk about, you know, how a player or how a person has handled a adverse situation. And I learned this a long time ago. The true colors of someone or some team or some individual or some organization is not when things are great. But when things are tough, that's when you really show what the hell you're made of. Because anybody can be a good guy or a good team or a good organization. When you won 5 in a row or you get a shutout or whatever, you really show what you're made of is when things are tough and when people are counting you out or those type of things. So for me, you just be ready to go when your number's called. And for me, it's Scott Darling's crease to lose from now on in this series, Jeff. I really believe that. Now, if he keeps winning, he keeps playing. Now, if they lose a game, the question that I would ask is, you know, how does he lose? You know, does he give up some bad goals? And then you can make the decision moving forward. But for me, the rest of the series, it's Scott Darling's crease to lose.
Now, Predators will be without Shea Weber.
That's a game changer.
But look, even without him, their advantage in shots through the first three games is almost 30. They had the bigger percentage of shot attempts Sunday in game three for the first time of the series. It's you really do notice though when Shea Weber isn't there, you just notice the demands being placed on other players as a result of that. And I don't know, how does Nashville overcome this in Game Four?
Their goaltender has to stop being leaky.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, some of the goals he's given up have been just bad goals, soft goals, whatever you want to call them, Jeff. But look,
Do you think he's hurt, Eddie?
Well, right now, I would just say his feelings are after giving up, a bunch of goals in the first three games of this series, Jeff. But, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I guess you could sit there and go, has he been the same guy since he's come back from his injury? And I think that we could all sit here and say, pretty confidently that he hasn't been. So I don't know. I mean, look, he's a very, very good goaltender. But Chicago's had his number over the years.
That's right.
Let me say this. I was dead wrong on where we are as far as goal four in this series to this point in the first three games. I mean, with Chicago struggling down the stretch, I mean, I think they had their last 25 games, they had scored 16 of the 25. They had two goals or less. And Nashville was defending well, and the goaltender seemed to be playing well, but they couldn't score a lick. So it just seemed to me, as a guy that likes to play the ponies and go, well, look, this is not going to be a high-scoring series. And it's been everything, it's been on the opposite end of that. I mean, Rene has been leaky. I mean, a couple of, the Saad goal the other day, Jeff, that can't happen, and that's very deflating. And when you play a team like Chicago, you give them a bad goal, there's a pretty good chance they're gonna make a great play, so it all of a sudden becomes a two-goal swing. But I think for Nashville, long-winded, Jeff, I think what they need to do, I think they need to be better station to station, meaning is that they got to manage the puck through the middle of the ice, not give any clear or clean breaks to the Blackhawks, and they have the ability to be able to defend. I mean, they got some good defending players on that team, especially on the back end. Roman Josi has been, I know he struggled the other day in Game 3, but, he's been a stud in this series. You can build around a guy like that. We know what Seth Jones has the ability to be able to play, but for me, it is about defending for Nashville. But when they've had the puck, they've generated and they have created, and you want to, the best defense in the world, as you know, Jeff, is when you got the rock on your stick. And if you can play in the offensive zone and keep the puck away from the Blackhawks as best you can, it's going to give yourself a chance. So, crucial game tonight. But for me, it starts with the guy in goal for Nashville. You've got to stop being leaky if they got any chance in the series.
Eddie, we just have a minute, but I did want to ask you about Jonathan Toews, his series so far, 2 goals, 3 assists. Do you ever get tired of watching this guy? I keep trying to come up with a different, way to qualify just how good he is or quantify how good he is. But
yeah, world class. Workmanlike every night. He has an effect on the game, Jeff, when he doesn't get points on the board, and that's saying something because there aren't a lot of players in this league. And forwards, okay, let's be forwards because they're defense, and that certainly do that. We know that. But he, I really believe, Jeff, he plays the right way, and I mean this in all due respect, is that I believe Jonathan Toews could be a top 5 scorer in the National Hockey League in the regular season if he cheated. I don't believe that it's in his DNA to cheat offensively. And look, you need guys offensively. You need guys to be able to put the puck in the back of the net, and he's a 75-point guy for sure. Mm-hmm. But if he cheated offensively, like most offensive players do, and err on the side of offense, he could be one of those type of players. But that's what separates him from a lot of players in the league, is he plays the right way, and I don't believe it's in his DNA to cheat offensively.
Eddie, we appreciate you doing this. We'll talk again next week.
Jeff, keep up the great work.
Thanks man. Safe travels. That's Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC, a traveling man. He is in Chicago, though. He's home tonight as the Predators and Blackhawks play. That game, by the way, will be at 9:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Again, Canucks Flames, 10 o'clock on CBC. Capitals Islanders, 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 360. And then the Lightning and the Red Wings, that game goes at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. That's it for the Jeff Blair Show. Stay with us, though. Kevin Barker's going to slide in here. We'll slip our Baseball Central hats on, and we'll get you set for the Jays and Baltimore Orioles. That 3-game series starts tonight. Don't go anywhere.